We've all heard the radio ads about the IRS. They tell you to be afraid, and they try to frighten you into calling. I'm here to tell you that Tax Relief Advocates is different. If you owe money to the IRS, whether it's $5,000, $50,000, or $500,000, TRA has a solution to your tax problem. It doesn't matter if you're sitting in your car, at work, or with your kids, no matter where you are. Visit TRA.com. Don't lose hope. TRA could reduce or even eliminate what you owe to the IRS. Their passion is taxes and helping individuals and businesses fix their IRS problems. They have over 1,000 five-star Google reviews and an A-plus with the Better Business Bureau. You don't need to be afraid of the IRS any longer. Generous tax relief programs are now available that can give you a fresh start. So don't wait. Simply visit TRA.com. That's TRA.com. Or call 800-583-5675. Once again, that's 800-583-5675. Tax Relief Advocates. Real solutions for real people.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With a message for everyone paying big wireless way too much. Please, for the love of everything good in this world, stop. With Mint, you can get premium wireless for just $15 a month. Of course, if you enjoy overpaying, no judgments, but that's weird. Okay, one judgment. Anyway, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan, equivalent to $15 per month required. Intro rate first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer live in New York. President Trump says the U.S. and Iran have reached an agreement to negotiate an end to the war. The peace agreement between Washington and Tehran is expected to kick off a 60-day negotiation period aimed at officially ending the war. The interim deal will be made official at a signing ceremony on Friday in Switzerland. A major condition of the agreement is that the Strait of Hormuz will be reopened once the deal is signed. Brent crude oil prices fell upon the peace deal announcement to $84. A barrel, while U.S. crude dropped to $81. The agreement is expected to dramatically increase oil ship traffic as nearly 25% of the world's oil passes through that strait. Earlier today, Israel struck Beirut, threatening to jeopardize the agreement. President Trump harshly condemned the attacks as Lebanon is key in negotiations. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer, back to One Nation.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to One Nation. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Hope you had a great weekend. We're going to end it strong here on One Nation tonight. On our show, you're going to love our roster of guests, includes Lee Zeldin. He has been asked to help out in California rebuild Pacific Palisades because they can't get out of their own way. He tells us what's happening there. Also on data centers, the reality behind it. Jamie Kennedy thinks he can save Los Angeles and save comedy. The comedian, actor, is going to be with us. And Adam Hunter wants to know, did anyone vet Plattner over in Maine? The answer is yes, sadly. But first, the fastest, most impactful monologue in America. We begin with the endless blame game. You know, there's no shortage of presidential critics. You can't flip through many channels, and I hope you don't flip channels. I hope you stay here. But when you do, everybody's always criticizing Trump. He always did something wrong. In fact, some people were actually even blaming him that the Knicks lost game 3 of the NBA Finals. Watch.
I blame Trump. I blame Trump for the simple fact that we won 13 consecutive games, and as soon as Trump show up, all goes to...
Trump wasn't responsible for the loss of the game, but he was responsible for the loss of joy that the New York Knicks fans had been feeling.
You know, no wonder the president gets frustrated. Now he's responsible for the loss of joy in sports. You know, it's easy to get caught up in the daily drama. You know, the headlines, the hot takes, the outrage of the day. But when you step back and look at the big picture, there's something else happening, and that's what we're going to do today. While everyone is focused on the trees in the forest, the ground in the open field is being tilled. The seeds are being planted. The grass is beginning to grow, and the policies that he put into place are beginning to impact all of you and will, if not yet, in years to come. So whether his critics want to admit it or not, there's a lot happening under President Trump. So let's review it. It's not making headlines, but the Trump accounts are out. Every American, Republican kid, Democratic kid, gets $1,000. That is creating a new generation of investors benefiting from the power of compound growth.
Our president is putting the American dream within reach of every citizen, no matter the circumstances of birth. When young Americans turn 28, they can use their Trump accounts to keep saving for their retirement, or they can use them to purchase a home or further their education.
Yes, they're in the game. Then there's the discounted prescription drugs. Everybody wanted that, right? Well, it's no longer a pipe dream. Trump Rx is the name. It's an online marketplace designed to make shopping for prescription drugs as easy as shopping on Amazon.
I think other than you, I've been the biggest proponent of TrumpRx.com. And the reason for that is Republicans want cheaper drugs, independents want cheaper drugs, Democrats want cheaper drugs, and together, I think we're going to do something special. As our volumes go up, our costs go down, which means we'll be ending up charging less to people over a period of time.
So yes, drugs are less. How long have we wanted this to happen? It's happening. Go on TrumpRx right now. What about tariffs, right? Tens of billions of dollars above levels seen in recent years have come into the coffers. Even with the court-mandated givebacks, it's still making money for the country. More than $10 trillion in American and foreign investment has been brought in, committed, already been put to work. The 2017 tax cuts for working families made permanent. No tax on tips, no new deductions for seniors, people already benefiting, and they're here to stay. And housing opportunities are back in play. He's directing private investment into working class communities, and he's incentivizing it to happen, making affordable housing more of a reality. He's not building the houses. He's letting private enterprise build the houses by offering incentives to do so. Then you got energy, unlocking America's vast resources. We got oil, we got gas, we got coal. Now we got geothermal, and then we got the rare earth, the critical minerals. And if we don't have it here, he's got mandates to go get it elsewhere. Cut deals. We work on it together. This is all from an array of executive orders. They don't make headlines, but they're making a difference. And yes, what about beautifying Washington? He's killing off crime. That's a fact just there. Everybody knows it. Refurbishing war memorials for year 250 and beyond. Rehabbing the Lincoln reflecting pool. It was done this week. And hammering away at the long overdue new ballroom that even President Obama's administration said, we wish we built ourselves. But the issue that has received the most attention from Trump has been immigration. As promised, he got 4 million illegals have been deported or they left on their own, so-called self-deported. The administration is pressing ahead with what many people say will be the largest mass deportation operation in American history. Border crossings have plummeted. That's a fact. And as we speak, you can almost hear the hammering. More wall is going up on our southern border. In fact, it'll be done this year.
We built an incredible wall that stretches more than 1,000. Think of it, 1,000 miles. And without that, we would not be as successful.
Meanwhile, our number one enemy in South America has been converted to an ally, Venezuela. In Cuba, they're calling your name next. Is inflation a problem? Yes. Has the war jacked up gas prices? Absolutely. And Americans are feeling the squeeze. That's clear. But supporters of the president say he has earned the benefit of the doubt. Iran has killed Americans and bedeviled six separate presidents. They punted in the past. He has chosen to pulverize all this in 16 months. And in just 5 months, voters will have their chance to render a verdict. And when they do, I just hope they see the whole picture. Joining me now to weigh in is Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson. Senator, this has been one busy president beyond the headlines, but you're someone who also comes from the business community. Has some of these policies already shown some benefit?
Well, first of all, excellent monologue, because you're laying out all the accomplishments. It's truly remarkable, particularly when you understand what enormous messes Democrats left behind. So now President Trump is secured the border. He's certainly getting the economy humming. And if you really want to understand why, you talked about individual initiatives and programs, but the basic ideology is the correct ideology. Rely on the private sector, rely on the hardworking ethic and the genius of the American public and the entrepreneurs that made this country great. Government doesn't make the country great. So by the tax cuts in 2017, 2018, making those things permanent, so we prevented a massive automatic tax increase. But then just President Trump's dedication to getting government out of people's lives so they can carry on with their lives, they can build businesses, they can create products and services that people enjoy. So the push toward deregulation, that was a big part of success in his first administration, and it's a big part of the success in the second. But it's really the ideology The idea that let the American people make this country great and try and get government out of the way. Lower taxes.
Free enterprise. No one gave you anything. You made your money on your own, been successful. And you said, I'm going to get back by serving in the Senate. But I think a lot of people are giving up on that dream and turning to socialism. And we're seeing it on the left. I mean, people are caught up in Graham Plattner and his indiscretions. I'm more caught up in his policies. This guy is Bernie Sanders. He's AOC. This guy called himself a communist. And he got 70% of the Democratic vote. I see what's happening with El Sayed over in Michigan. This Chris Rabb over in Pennsylvania. And you see the popularity in some cases of the mayor in New York City. What's going on with the attraction of socialism, and why are Democrats embracing it?
Well, apparently people like free stuff. So they listen to that siren song of socialism. And I can understand, like, after the Great Depression, where, you know, laissez-faire capitalism didn't seem to work too well, you embrace something like socialism. But look at history. You know, any place socialism or communism has been tried, you lose all your freedom and you destroy your country, you destroy your economy. So why would anybody in, you know, 100 years later start embracing that? Again, it's just that appeal of let somebody else take care of me, grow government so government can take care of me, and I don't have to worry about anything. The problem is it ends up being a miserable failure. All these policies that AOC and the Democrats, and let's face it, they're all radical leftists now. They don't do anything to build things. I mean, you know, all the things that President Trump, he's a builder. Look at all the things he's repairing. He loves that, and America's going to appreciate it. Apparently, once he's gone, I mean, they're not appreciating it now, unfortunately, because of the Trump derangement syndrome. But socialism failed every time it's tried. It wouldn't work here. Democrat policies will destroy this country.
And I just think that people need to see hope and pursue that dream. Right now, they feel a little bit hopeless. And let's try to instill that in them. And then socialism won't look as attractive. Just an opportunity. That's what America offers, not outcomes. I want to talk about something else that you discovered. And that is, back in 2021, you're in the minority in the Senate. And you're trying to push for people to look at the vaccine and the dangers that can be associated with it. Now, there's a bombshell report accusing the Biden administration of knowing about the dangers and covering up those dangers. Tell me about what you discovered.
So because of Bobby Kennedy's commitment to radical transparency, we got 11 million pages, and my staff is great at, you know, finding needles in the haystack. So what we found is that on March 1st, 2021, less than 3 months after the emergency use authorization, Peter Marks, head of the division within FDA that approves vaccines and supposed to watch out for safety signals, was warned that the algorithm they were using to analyze vaers was going to hide and mask safety signals. 26 days later, using a new algorithm that unmasked those safety signals, he was shown 25 safety signals on things like sudden cardiac death, pulmonary infarction, Bell's palsy, different types of strokes. For three consecutive months, Dr. Anna Sharsman, she's the one that showed him this, kept showing him additional safety signals. And instead of pinning a badge on her chest and saying, thank you, this is exactly what we wanted to do, to make doctors aware, to inform the American public, they buried it. They told her to cease and desist. It's not your job. We don't want your data runs. And they continue to use that algorithm that they knew was hiding safety signals. So, you know, Brian, since March 1st of 2021, any American that was coerced, mandated, or convinced to take the shot without that information, and now we've got 39,000 deaths worldwide reporting on vaers. 24% of those deaths occur on the day of vaccination or within 1 or 2 days. So those people ought to be pretty upset that they weren't given the information to make an informed choice with informed consent. It's the biggest government scandal in my lifetime, and not one major news network is covering this. It continues to be buried. I appreciate you, and I appreciate Fox at least allowing me to tell this story. American people need to understand this.
Yeah, I know two soccer players that no longer could play. They lost their college careers because they took the shot, even though they were 100% healthy, and their heart never fully recovered. And they're still, to this day, cannot train hard because of that issue from the shot affecting their heart. At least be told the risk. We're told every single day on these commercials. We always hear about the risk on every single medicine, but we weren't told that with the vaccine. And it doesn't mean it didn't help people, but it means we should be fully informed and it can't happen again. Thanks for what you do, Senator. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
clearly people weren't taking fraud seriously. Whether it rises to the level of a criminal violation, we're going to investigate it. And of course, if it does rise to that level, we're going to prosecute it. We have to.
Yep, J.D. Vance laying down the hammer on Minnesota, referring Governor Tim Walz and State Attorney General Keith Ellison to the DOJ for criminal fraud investigation involving his social services programs that happened in his state on his watch. But the administration may just be scratching the surface because California is giving Minnesota a run for its money. The administration announcing this month that 800 hospice and home health care providers have been suspended from federal funding. But just this week, funding was cut from the Los Angeles agency responsible for coordinating billions in homeless spending. So they are cut off. So could California be the mother lode for fraud? Let's ask California Post opinion editor Joel Pollack. Joel, you've been watching Minnesota. This is how we all got started with the fraud investigation. Is it worse in California?
It's worse by orders of magnitude because it is in every state agency. And people first became aware of it when the pandemic happened and California managed to lose $20 billion, upwards of $30 billion to fraud through the unemployment department. But it is everywhere in the healthcare system, in housing, homelessness, everywhere.
So Medicaid, so the New York Post, you were involved in this, editing this story, Medicaid fraud in California, far worse than you think. So as they started to investigate, they found what?
As they started looking into it, they found that there were huge numbers of providers that were simply milking the system, which is very easy to do in California. There's no enforcement, and there hasn't been for a while. You know, our gubernatorial race between Steve Hilton and Javier Becerra is set for the fall. Becerra was attorney general of the state of California when a lot of these frauds started taking place and really taking root.
And HHS secretary, too. So under Biden.
Yes.
So and also you talk about the Trump administration yanking the funding about the homeless agency. Now, famously, you guys in California and in Los Angeles have more homeless than anybody else. And Karen Bass is bragging that it's down 3 or 4%. You talk about it, over 100,000 people. So they're putting money into it, and the situation isn't getting measurably better. But where is the money going? Because I understand in California, you're talking about how much money? $2 billion?
So just to set the picture again, as you said, homelessness in the state of California went up from about 150,000 to about 180,000 over Gavin Newsom's tenure. In the city of L.A., it also went up over the last decade. It's come down slightly. Some homeless people have actually moved inland to other cities. You're seeing it go up in Fresno and Sacramento. But there has been a crackdown in some of the more visible coastal cities. But this money comes in for homeless services, and it's part of what we call the homelessness industrial complex, where these organizations and agencies get set up to solve the problem. And then instead of solving the problem, they do whatever they want with the money and then ask for more money because the homeless problem just keeps getting bigger.
But here's what people always ask me. Who's getting arrested? Where is the money? Are we getting this money back? And how do you feel about the president's move to just cut off California? So, and that's what Karen Bass says. Yeah, there's a problem. Just please keep the money coming.
So some people are being arrested. The Trump administration and Bill Esalie, the first assistant U.S. attorney here, has been very aggressive. There have been people arrested for using homeless funding to speculate on real estate. You know, they buy a house and they flip the house for more money and they keep the difference. People have been arrested. That's starting to happen. But what's interesting is if you look at the L.A. City Council, there's a special tax they call the mansion tax, even though it applies to apartment buildings, commercial buildings. It was supposed to provide money for affordable housing. When you look at where the money goes, it's not building homes. It's going to these NGOs. It's going to advocacy organizations. It's going to organizations that promote defund the police and anti-ICE protests. And so this money that's supposed to go for homelessness is often fueling and funding the activism against the city.
So, Joel, think about it, and I know you have. So if you're defunding the police and you're going for left-wing causes, if the Democrats are in charge, they're not going to be cracking down on people, taking state and federal money,
right,
and using it for the wrong reasons. So one of the, there was huge week in terms of testimony and investigation, one of which was what's going on in these high schools. So we're going down again to what's appropriate for the superintendents to be supervising. I want you to hear a San Francisco superintendent try to defend having drag queen story hour for their students. Watch.
At what age do you think students should be exposed to drag queen story hour?
I am really proud to be the superintendent of San Francisco Unified School District.
At what age are students prepared for drag queen story hour?
Well, we welcome all 49,000 students as they are. We support our students. We work really hard.
At what age do you think it's appropriate for Drag Queen Story Hour for your students?
We follow state and federal laws where we align our curriculum with state standards.
So this went on defending. This is a form of what we saw with the Ivy League presidents when they expose themselves by answering the question the way they did. Does she not know what the right answer is? What is the right answer?
So there's no right answer in terms of San Francisco politics, because if she gives an age that is too high, then she comes back and she's going to catch hell from the left-wing progressives, the LGBTQ movement in San Francisco. If she says an age that's too low, there is a conservative backlash, or maybe a left-of-center backlash in San Francisco against some of this stuff. You know, in 2022, there was a recall vote that replaced three members of the school board in San Francisco. The people of San Francisco are starting to get fed up, and they are demanding reading, writing, arithmetic, not Drag Queen Story Hour. But there's a battle going on right now. You have the hardline left versus parents who still want to raise their kids in San Francisco.
And plus, they also went on to say, and these superintendents, we don't have time to roll it, that when asked, is it okay for a male who says he's a female to go into a women's locker room, the answer to these superintendents is yes. That shows you how backwards it is, because if you ask the American people, it's 98% to 2% no. Joel, thanks so much. I love what California, the California Post is doing, and I know you have a lot, everything to do with that. Thanks so much for joining us. All right, meanwhile, straight ahead on this show, outrage is growing over slow efforts to rebuild after the Palisades wildfire. You know about that, Joel. Lee Zeldin is here because he's helping out from the federal government perspective and trying to get a fire lit underneath Karen Bass's office. And still to come on this show, actor and comedian Jamie Kennedy still thinks Hollywood can make a comeback. Is he right? We'll discuss it. Quick note, be sure to catch me in Pensacola, Florida in just about a month. History, Liberty, and Laughs. I bring history to life in a fun, entertaining, insightful way. Go to BrianKilmeade.com for details and look at all those other dates in the fall. I expect to see everybody in person, all streamed on Fox Nation. Bring up the music. So rebuilding is underway in the Pacific Palisades, but 17 months after wildfires changed the face of the region, the progress is nowhere near what it should be, thanks to leadership failures from top to bottom. You got red tape, permit problems, all predictable, and now the reservoir that was empty during the fires, dry again, sparking fresh fears in the community that it's going to happen again because wildfire season is upon us. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin was tapped by President Trump to accelerate the rebuilding efforts, sending 1,600 employees to assist in the response. Joining us now with some answers, we hope, is EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin. Lee, the president, when he sat down at a press conference days after the fire, said, pick up the pace. These people need help. They didn't. What are you doing to push things forward?
So the president gets sworn in. He instantly signs an executive order saying EPA has 30 days to complete our hazardous material removal so the Army Corps can come in and complete their debris removal. So we had that phase one. We did it in less than 30 days. We completed it in 28. Army Corps completed their debris removal in 100. SBA, Small Business Administration, under the leadership of Kelly Loeffler, they had half of their disaster loans, over $3 billion in 2025, go to LA victims. But at the one-year mark, President Trump was looking at the situation on the ground. He was happy with the way that the admin had been responding in 25. We said, you know what? Let's see if there's a way to help out with the non-federal log jams to break through that. Over the course of these last few months, since President Trump asked me to lead this effort on behalf of the admin on the permits, we have seen now over 3,000 new permits get punched over the finish line. We have been working other issues that you might not expect EPA to work on regarding insurance companies, because some were doing a good job, some weren't, dragging their customers through the mud, requiring all this paperwork, and then underpaying at the end. On the banking front, we had businesses that have to, you had people who had to both pay their mortgage, but they were renting another property. So the mortgage forbearance, President Trump ended up applying pressure on banks for help there as well. So it's been multi-pronged effort where these are non-conventional, non-traditional EPA duties, responsibilities. But President Trump says, you know, damn the torpedoes, let's just do whatever we possibly can to help, even if it's not something the federal government is usually doing.
So, yeah, I mean, you have things like this. California has a $2.5 billion relief package. It has not reached 60% of the money has not been spent yet. I mean, it's been over a year. So you take it's believe it or not, you need an organization to spend correctly. And when money's unspent, that is also spells catastrophe.
Yeah, how this rebuild is done is important as well. You know, if you're going to do anything with infrastructure, that should be done at the onset before you start to rebuild all these individual houses. Now you have builders on these individual properties. It's hard to then, you know, tear up roads and sidewalks with all these other builders now on their houses. So the order has been a bit out. You know, also, there's other things that need to get changed. And you just referenced it on the water flow front. They rely on gravity to get water to flow down. They have pressure pumps that they rely on to get water to flow up. But when a fire hits and people start turning on their sinks and their sprinklers, their faucets, the fire hydrants start going, the pressure starts getting reduced, and it's hard to get the water to flow upstream. So they need to improve that. They need to get more redundancy of water supplies. If one thing fails, something else is available. And then also on fire prevention, you have a state park right next to the Palisades. There should be brush clearance right there near the edge of the state park to the properties so that you give residents more time to flee, fire departments more time to stage. But unfortunately, that wasn't done. That should be done everywhere, improving water flow and forest management. That would be a big deal to prevent whatever could happen next.
Lee, you got a full plate, one of which is getting these data centers built and environmentally friendly. And there's questions that are mounting about these data centers and a lot of misinformation out there about the data centers. And I was struck, too, as we were preparing for different segments for you. Brad Paisley in Nashville says, I don't want this built in Nashville. Watch.
First of all, they don't have the power to build this. They don't have the water. It doesn't belong there. It would be an enormous monstrosity, an absolute eyesore, and detract in every way from not only the zoo, but that area. It's not too late to stop it either. The zoo is one of the sources of joy in the city. It is one of the top zoos in the world. It's family memories. It is expanding itself. It's got all these plans to become even better as a resource for our city. Let's stop it. They don't have to do
with
this.
With data centers, you got a lot of blue-collar jobs, plumbers, pipe fitters, electricians. But it seems there's a big push not to build it in this state. Brad Paisley, the latest. What's the reality of the environmental risks with building a data center?
It really depends on how the data center gets built, whether or not the data center is going to be taking net energy off of the grid, or they're going to have behind the meter infrastructure and they're going to be net providing to the grid, where they're going to be providing a net benefit to the local ratepayers. On the waterfront, is it a closed loop system and it's 100% recyclable, or is this going to be structured in a way where they're constantly going to be tapping into the local water supply? So how these deals get structured. President Trump's been big with his ratepayer protection pledge to make sure that the deal with the hyperscaler is structured to provide that benefit to the local community. It's important to be transparent and engaging with the public, but making sure that both with the way that you're generating energy and you're cooling your equipment, there's a way to do this right. I've seen it firsthand. One of the examples comes to mind, data center West Memphis, Arkansas. The state of Arkansas, Entergy, and Google, they structured this deal to provide an over $1 billion net benefit to the Entergy ratepayer. There's a big range of how these data centers can go. The idea of just saying, you know, we're not going to win this AI arms race with China. We're going to cede this and allow them to get so far ahead we can't catch up. That is absolutely the wrong answer.
Lee, thanks so much. You're doing a great job. Appreciate the few minutes you spent with us today, tonight. Next on our show, remember catching a comedy at the movies? Remember that was fun? It feels like those days are over. But Malibu's most wanted, Jamie Kennedy, is here to tell us Hollywood wants to make you laugh again. There's hope for comedies. Plus, check out my YouTube channel. You'll be absolutely love it. Go to YouTube.com at The Brian Kilmeade Show. I stand like that the whole time.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer live in New York. Much of the world is breathing a sigh of relief tonight after the U.S. and Iran reached an interim deal to end their months-long war and reopen the Strait of Hormuz toll-free. A formal signing is set for Friday in Switzerland. President Trump says the vital waterway will reopen once the deal is officially signed. Now, the strait was originally supposed to reopen as soon as an agreement was reached, but officials say they need time to clear mines. The U.S. blockade on Iranian ports is also expected to be lifted, though it's not clear if that process has already begun. Once signed, the agreement will launch a 60-day negotiation period on Iran's nuclear program and to officially end the war. As part of the deal, Tehran will also reportedly receive phased sanction relief. The deal has caused oil prices to drop sharply and U.S. stock futures to soar. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer. I'm back to One Nation with Brian Kilmeade.
You feeling froggy? Dan Lee. Anybody else want to step?
No.
What the hell got into you?
Shut up, Hal.
Why are you peeing right here?
What?
I mean, why'd you pee right next to me when you, like, choose that bush? Or...
Well, it sounds like a good bush to pee on. Why are you peeing on it?
Well, no one was here when I chose this bush.
Oh! So you get to pee on it? No one else does? Huh?
No, it's... I just...
This your bush? You have a special bond with this bush?
Nice. Classic comedies like that are few and far in between because Hollywood's changed. One featured a Malibu teen trying to live the life of a rapper. The other pushed the limits of political correctness at every turn. Somewhere along the way, Hollywood became too afraid to offend, it seems. And in the process, stopped making the edgy, risk-taking comedies that once filled the box office and theaters. Now, actor and comedian Jamie Kennedy, pictured earlier, says the culture may be swinging back. But does he believe a movie like Malibu's Most Wanted could be made today? I have an idea. Let's ask him. Joining me now is Jamie Kennedy. He's also the host of Hate to Break It to You podcast. Jamie, great to see you.
How are you, brother? Thank you for having me.
When we were playing those clips, were you thinking that was then, or were you thinking that could be now?
It was definitely then. It was definitely a fun time. It was definitely not an overthinking at time. But I think it's coming back. I think it can be. And let's give props to where all props need to be given with the Wayans brothers. Last week, the historic open of Scary Movie 6, the biggest of the franchise and one of the biggest openings of comedy ever, and one of the stars of Malibu, Damian Dante, is one of the Wayans family.
Right.
So it's they're pushing it.
So where did it go? What was the reason it left? Why did everyone get so politically correct, and why did comedy take it the hardest?
I call it the great wokeness of 2017. Around 2017, with Me Too happening, which it should have, you know, we got to get rid of creeps. But with that, we had to get rid of, if things started being deemed as hate speech, jokes became, what is that? Is that a joke or hate speech? And everybody, and then the rise of social media where everybody has an opinion, everybody has a voice. So you could do a joke to, and no one would get it before, and you wouldn't hear their response. But now everyone that could be offended could actually voice their opinion to it.
So remember Dodgeball? Meet the Fockers, Eurotrip, 40-year-old virgin. Mm-hmm. The premise is, you told the producers, you think it could come back. Are we getting our sense of humor back? Are people realizing we overcorrected?
Overcorrected huge. People want to laugh. The business economics are there. Look, you can make these movies for cheap, $2, $3 million, and have a 10x return. So they should do it. And it's lacking. There's a lacking of it in the Cineplex.
So let's talk about something else. You from Philadelphia, mm-hmm. you live here, mm-hmm. and you're not going anywhere.
No.
Let's take a look at some of the people that have left already, are about to leave. Matthew McConaughey, Dennis Quaid says, I'm out. He's left already. Chris Hemsworth has left. Julia Roberts, Sylvester Stallone. These are the mega stars that go, I'm out. Mm-hmm. But not Jamie Kennedy.
No.
I put you at the top of that list. Above Stallone. Right?
No.
I mean, yeah.
I
didn't like the Expendable series. That's why I put you
in. No, he's the best. Stallone.
I know. He's great.
He went to Florida, which is, you know, he's older.
But why do you want to stay?
It's like people forget that L.A. is not just a place of Hollywood. It's my home. Like, I know where my favorite coffee shop is. I go to Sugarfish Sushi. I know where my favorite taco stand is. I have people I love here. It's my area. I can get on a Lime scooter and go to the comedy clubs. It's L.A. People forget this. It's a top five destination in the world.
So you also believe that the entertainment industry can come back. You can 100%. Clean up Hollywood. You can get production back. Some have said, like Harvey Levin was on with us a few weeks ago on TMZ and says, the tax incentives are too great in places like Ireland and Serbia and not enough in America or Los Angeles.
He's 100% right. But look at Obsession. It was all shot where? Burbank. Okay, and Netflix is really doing a great job in Hollywood and gentrifying it and refurbishing it. So they're taking blocks and making tons of sound stages. So something's going to happen there.
Right. Do you believe that streaming can coexist with the big theaters?
100%. Because you could have something that's huge on Netflix, and also look at we have a this is a renaissance of movies right now. Like, there's four movies in the theater this weekend that I want to see, which is very rare. So I believe that people are going to find what they want to watch.
So I lived here from 1994. Mm-hmm. And I'll say the thing is, I do see the homeless is just as bad as everyone says. And the Hollywood Boulevard is an absolute train wreck.
Worse.
You says it's fixable. You believe it's fixable.
Because
I haven't seen the people to fix it.
Well, here's the thing. Is this like this? I did this thing on my Instagram. I went to this great restaurant on 3rd Street, and in order to get my $9 latte, I had to step over a human pile of excrement. Now, these, can I say libs, are sitting there not dealing nothing, enjoying their coffee, but no one wants to talk about it. That's why I love Spencer, because he at least pointed it out. Absolutely. It has to be adjusted.
I know. And I wish he would have won everything, but it didn't work out this time. But, man, he got a lot of people's attention.
Yeah.
Jamie Kennedy, great to see you in person.
Great to see
Congratulations.
You.
It's good to know you get along with my other guests so well, like Adam Hunter.
Adam's the man.
Yeah, he is. Meanwhile, the vetting process for public office ain't what it used to be. How Graham Plantner got to where he is today. Next, with the always funny and never vetted Adam Hunter. Don't move. All right, in case you missed it, Graham Plantner, the scandal-plagued oyster farmer, so to speak, from Maine, secured the Democratic nomination for the Senate this week, 70% of the vote, and will take on five-term GOP Senator Susan Collins in November. But the real question is, how did he even get here in the first place? How did a Nazi tattoo go unnoticed? How did old Reddit posts with homophobic slurs and blatant dismissal of military sexual assaults not get flagged? Here's how.
We paid a nice firm a whole chunk of money and got some stuff back. Some of what you've seen on the news we got back, other stuff we didn't.
Did the vetting process turn up the tattoo that became so controversial?
No.
The Reddit posts, did that turn up in the vetting process?
The firm sent us a thing, and it had some of the posts, but it didn't have all of them. I said none of this will or should stop him from becoming a U.S. senator.
Do you have a Google search engine? Did anyone ever vet the vetters? Who did you hire, and can you get your money back? Joining us now is writer, actor, and one of the MVPs, Gutfeld, Adam Hunter. Adam, great to see you. I wanted to play that soundbite ahead of time for you, because you probably wouldn't have believed me if I just read the quote. No. That's the better.
Yeah, I mean, the guy makes, like, Dylan Mulvaney look like Clint Eastwood. That voice looked like he was going through puberty, like, while it's like they had a clasp on his nuts. Right. It was I don't understand how this guy gets through. Then putting down the war veteran, then it was just the Nazi tattoo should have been it.
Putting down, he said he should have died.
Yeah.
Purple Heart.
Yeah, no, that should have been it. Then he was like, now it's all like cheating on his wife.
Right.
He was sending people all kinds of pics. But meanwhile, Time magazine has him on the cover.
Right.
You know how many copies they sold? 9.
So no one has to tell you here in the city who the mayor is. Currently, it is Karen Bass. She wants 4 more years. I don't know why. One of the things of Pacific Palisades was when there's a fire and you don't bring water to it, the very least you could help people rebuild it. But it's not happening, which is, we talked to Lee Zeldin about this on this very show. But here's the worst of the worst. It looks like her brother is among those suing Los Angeles for the fact that his home got burnt down. He's suing his own sister.
I mean, why not just ask money at Thanksgiving?
I know.
I mean, you thought like Ilhan Omar and her brother was awkward when they got divorced.
Right.
I mean, this is
it hurts the whole family.
This is like the Biden family after he slept with his brother's widow. Right. It's insane. I mean, the Palisades is just, I guess she's rebuilding and making bigger tents right now, but it's horrible. I was actually, you know, I'm from here. I was in Florida when it was going on, the fire, and I'm watching TV, and I told my wife, I said, listen, because we're pretty close. I said, get our daughter, we have two dogs, two cats, chickens, bunnies, everyone in a car, drive to Fresno. And I'm so happy I did, because I came home to an empty house.
you just wanted some peace and quiet.
That's all I wanted.
Right, you had no fear of the fire.
None.
I just picked that up now. Yeah. I was a little late to that one. So we'll find out what happens. But it would be great if they actually rebuilt things in Los Angeles. And if you're not able to, you should really lose your job. But that doesn't seem to be happening. Next, I like to bring up this. And I thought this was not a true story until I found out they did a poll on it. It turns out Gen Zers continue to astound. In New York, we're 3,000 miles away, but where I work full-time, Gen Zers are going on practice dates with people they don't even like because they don't get to practice enough. So when the theory, I guess, is when they do find someone they like, they'll know what works to move that story forward.
I mean, why not just go out with someone that you like? And,
right. And
if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Right.
I mean, because I think eventually you just know. Like, I was 40, single, with no kids. In California, that's normal. In the Midwest, I'm a homosexual.
Right.
But eventually.
But there's anything wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with it.
Right.
It's Pride Month. By the way, and it is crazy because, first of all, even if you're attracted to the person, it might not work. Because some girls are so hot, they're terrible in bed. They think being there is enough.
Right.
And let me tell you something, ladies, it is.
in your case.
Just
speaking for Adam Hunter.
Just for me, yeah.
Right.
But my wife is beautiful. And she told me, she's like, I am so much hotter than your ex. And I'm like, I know, I traded up. Wait to see my next wife.
That's probably not a great follow-up.
Yeah.
Right. And she knows you're kidding.
She knows I'm kidding.
Because she knows you're a comedian.
Of course.
All right. So, Adam, when can we see you on stage again?
This week I'll be at the Funny Bone in Albany, as well as Syracuse. I'll be in Wise Guys in Utah and Salt Lake City also, all coming up this week.
And by the way, Syracuse, I've been there. It's a fantastic venue. Yeah.
Yeah.
And my son went to college there. So
oh, nice.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I actually, he wanted to go to so bad, I called up the owner. I said, listen, he's 19. Can he go? He goes, well, put him in a different section. He can go.
Oh, that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It was an anecdote I probably could have saved, but I just wanted to share with you to show that I was for real. So go find out more about Adam Hunter, and I can't wait to see you again on Gutfeld. Adam, meanwhile, straight ahead, it's now time for your sneak peek of the week. What to look forward to? World leaders gathering for the G7 summit in France. The president's going. It should be explosive. And a Senate hearing is scheduled on the future of K-12 education. I'm personally for it, but they want to find a way to weave in AI, artificial intelligence, with it. Keep your fingers crossed it'll work. And World Cup Game 2. The U.S. takes on the Australians. This is a game they have to win. It'll be in Seattle Friday, June 19th. That is it for us tonight. Be sure to pre-order my brand new book. Adam will give you 10% off. It's called Uniting the States, 6 Crucial Moments That Forged the American Miracle. I think you'll love it. And be on the lookout for this news. George Washington's Secret Six, my first history book, is now going to become a movie. It's going to be adapted. The scriptwriter is Christian Wallace from Landman. He is the creator, and he's the scriptwriter there. We're thrilled. Tune into my radio show from 9 to noon every single day. Amongst my guests on Monday, Kevin Roberts, who runs the Heritage Foundation, and Mark Thiessen, who doesn't. And be sure to watch Fox and Friends in just a few hours. I'm going to jump in the shower, going to use a little conditioner, and I'll be back on with those nice people. Stay within yourself, everyone, and remember, keep it right here on Fox all day and all night.
Spotify, it's Jay Shetty. Are you one of those media strategy people? Scrolling through spreadsheets, searching for an audience that pays twice as much attention to your ads than they do on social? Let me introduce you to Fans. And they're here with me on Spotify. Trust me, I know Fans. They don't skip, they stay for hours. They don't move on, they manifest. They're not a demographic group, they're fans.
Spotify advertising. You're among fans.